think Zuckerberg's onto something there. Right, last week we gave away a Chaos Battle Force. We've got it all packed up. The winner has been picked. He's in the prize center. So go to the prize center and check out and claim your prize. Hey, go, Justin. Right, this week we're giving away this beautiful pair of dungeon books. It's the Dungeon Books of Battle Mats. To sweeten the deal, we're also going to throw in this 70-piece terrain crate. It has 70 pieces of incredible dungeon terrain. To be in with a chance of winning that, all you have to do is comment on this video, hit like, subscribe, and please, if you could help us out by sharing the vid, that's always awesome for us. Right, finally, we're giving away another 3D miniature in this episode. Stay tuned to the end of the episode to see Gore the Barbarian. Right. Loads to talk about, so little time. Weekend starts now. And welcome to the show, guys. Okay, kicking off, some updates. We have a video series that just went out covering the new World War III by Team Yankee. Yeah. So we have a number of videos out there. We're looking at the Brits. We have the British book chat. We're looking at the main rule book and stuff as well. So if you're into your Cold War gone hot, now this is proper, full-on World War III, go and check that out. In other Cold War news, there's an event coming up they might want to know about.
There is indeed. The guys who run Historicon have their Cold War spring convention, and the guys from Battlefront are actually going to be running two tournaments at that. So on Friday, they're going to have the Flames of War Mid-War tournament, so three games over the day, and then on Saturday, they're going to be running the Team Yankee World War III. So again, three games from early in the morning to late at night for all of your tournaments. Flames of War goodness.
Yeah, so if you want the details, it's March 12th through 15th, and it's in Lancaster.
Pennsylvania!
Yeah, yeah, that's where we went for Historicon last year. Really fun show.
Right. We're coming up to what is rapidly becoming a new favourite segment in the Weekender.
Yes.
Indie of the Week!
Yes.
So I have picked our Indie of the Week this week. And my Indie of the Week that I'd like to tell you guys all about are Adrian's Walls.
Okay, not Hadrian then.
Not Hadrian's Walls. Adrian's Walls. Now, I first came across Adrian's Walls on eBay, where they did. I found this beautiful, beautiful. Well, there's two things that I found. One is they did these beautiful Viking ships. But then I discovered Revell's plastic Viking ships, so there was lots of them floating around. But the other thing that they've done that I haven't seen elsewhere is this beautiful 28mm Crusader kind of tents and stuff. So if we bring up the website there.
Yeah, I've got it here.
So this is Adrian's Walls. No, this is all pre-painted resin terrain. So it is super, super good. If you can go through, so this is their Dark Age range. Now, I actually own one of these Viking ships. I think it's that top one there, the Viking longship.
Would you like me to open it?
Yeah, yeah, go for it, man. It's, like, check that out. It is just a piece of loveliness.
Yeah, and then you can change the heads and all on it.
Oh, yeah, you get a couple of different head options. And
You can practically see the nails in the planking along the ship. There's quite a bit of detail in those.
Now, it's the one I really want to show off is their Holy Land to Asia range. Now, if you can scroll down a bit, Justin, it's... Yes, right. Do you see that Tent Crusader tent pack?
This one?
Yes. Check that out.
Ooh, that's cool.
Isn't that lovely?
That's nice, but the Lord's one's better.
Well, do you want to see the Lord's one?
That is cool. Yeah. Is this 28mm stuff?
Yep, that's 28mm.
All 28mm, and it's all pre-painted.
So check out the Lord's tent.
Now, there's a man who knows how to go tenting.
Now, that is a tent and a half.
Check out all those proper one penny bases. Amazing.
They're 2p bases. They've got to be 2p bases.
I think it's a mixture. Hang on. Let me see if I can change the orientation. It's a mixture.
Oh, it's a mixture.
Those guys either side are one pennies.
Right. And then there's one more that I want you to have a look at, Justin. Uh-huh. So if you go back.
Yep, going back.
And do you see, scroll down a wee tiny touch. Yes, see the Tent Crusader Army Camp. Now, it's 120 quid, but it is completely...
Everything you need.
And it's pre-painted.
Yeah.
It's pre-painted.
It's ready to go on the battlefield.
Ready to go.
Ooh, it's pre-painted.
Yeah. All pre-painted, ready to go. Adrian's Walls even have a service where you can send them your stuff and they will paint it. Mm. So they'll paint up your terrain and bits and pieces as well. Mm-hmm. Fabulous little company. I have been watching them. Oh, I would love that Crusader encampment. Yeah. But when I come to do my 28 mil Crusader-y stuff.
Gotta say, I'm kind of digging their 55 days at Peking range. Mm. Mm-hmm. Looks really cool.
That's weirdly, that's one of the ones I was looking at.
Let's look at this.
It is.
Because
there's not a huge amount of people out there who do Chinese buildings anyway. And if you're doing well, the Boxer Rebellion.
Are there any chickens in there?
No.
That's a shrine.
You can't get chickens.
There's going to be a chicken coop in there, so we're going to have some Peking chicken.
Yep. Or bat soup.
Peking cat.
So.
But yeah, they're absolutely beautiful if you want to do, well, they've got feudal
look at
pieces
it.
In front of that, but yeah. But equally, if you want to do the Boxer Rebellion, if you want to kick off with your colonials there.
Yeah. Very cool. Mm.
It is really, really nice. So that is your Indie of the Week. It's Adrian's Walls. The link will be in the show notes, guys. Definitely go and check it out. Now, it's put me in a little bit of a mood for some Crusader-y stuff. So I think it's time to melt Justin's mind. Justin.
Been a while.
I have been told that it has been too long since I've melted your mind. It's been at least 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So that,
you know, the off-camera melters are a little bit different.
I have a combined mind melter.
Okay.
And a challenge for our wonderful, beautiful community, all wrapped up in one in a beautiful Crusades era bow.
Right.
So you know I'm into the Crusades.
Yeah, you've been bending your ears about it for a while. We've been doing some 3D printing, some table builds, some army builds.
Yeah, so I'm working on a Crusades participation game that I can take to some events and play with all of you guys. So I've been really kind of getting into the Crusades era, and I'm particularly fond of the Third Crusade.
Right.
So the Third Crusade was led by Richard the Lionheart.
Right, so is
Richard
this the one...
First of England, who was French.
All right, so this is the one where, after it was done, the Robin Hood legend kicked off.
Yes, he came back and kicked out King John, because King John, his brother, was trying to steal his throne.
Yeah, usurpation.
But that's not the most interesting thing.
Okay.
The most interesting stuff of Richard Lionheart took place over in the Holy Lands.
Yeah.
Okay. Where he did this incredible siege on Acre. Mm-hmm. He was just, he really proved his mettle.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's some chats you've had with us where you were saying, just on his way there, he just randomly decided to take over in Ireland and just did it.
Well, yeah, he conquered Cyprus.
Yeah.
Cyprus then remained conquered for hundreds of years after that. Mm. So, you know, he really had...
It was on point.
A very big impact, a much bigger impact than they thought at the time, because he didn't take Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And I'm about to explain to you why.
Okay, and this is the thing that's going to melt my mind, or is that something else?
So I've laid out a scenario here.
Yeah.
So this scenario is about the Crusaders' worst enemy.
Okay.
So the Crusaders... under Richard the Lionheart, had this formation that they used to march along, which made them very defensible on their way down the coast as they moved their way to Jerusalem. Mm. Okay,
which they didn't get to.
Well, they didn't take Jerusalem because so much bad kind of mojo had happened to them on the way there, and they didn't think they could hold it or whatever. But I think mostly it was down to their worst enemy.
Worst enemy, okay.
So... the story goes that on their way down to Jerusalem, they set up an encampment, okay?
Right. So we've got all of our tents, our supply wagons.
So this is my encampment. So here you have your kind of spiky bits, because know, he doesn't want to get attacked by Saladin and his forces. Yeah. You know, here's Richard the Lionheart here standing up there, getting ready to shout at his men. And then we've got some little groups of guys, you know, just running around trying to attack or getting ready to attack their worst ever enemy.
Yeah, well, if you're trying to get into things, you know, nobody likes spiky bits.
Mm-hmm. Who do you think their worst enemy was then?
Disease.
Other than disease?
Other nobles, rival nobles?
No, and it wasn't the Saracens either.
Okay.
Tarantulas.
Tarantulas.
Justin?
You know I'm an arachnophobe. Okay, it's just toys, that's fine.
Okay, so I have some little tarantulas here. So what happened was that they set up this camp and they were attacked by thousands upon thousands of tarantulas.
Right, so basically they find tarantulas central.
Yes, so the tarantulas crawled out. So this is my representation of the Holy Lands. It's not all desert over there, you know. So so this is kind of nice and lush, because remember, they want to stay near water.
Yeah.
So this is where the tarantulas are going to come from, okay? Yeah. A contemporary writer wrote at the time. So they had a writer that was there recording recording the story of the crusade as it unfolded.
These little guys are cute. Have a look at those.
Yeah. And he wrote about the attack that took place on that night.
Right.
So basically the tarantulas came and they started to bite the men.
Right.
And the men couldn't understand where they were coming from, and these big-ass tarantulas biting and going on
at them.
The men then started to swell up, okay?
Yeah.
And the swelling was so bad, okay, that they that he writes that they did the worst farts he's ever smelt in his life. And they literally farted themselves to death. Okay?
Okay, now I know for a fact that even though tarantulas are poisonous, they're not lethal.
Mm-hmm. No. Well, remember, this is a different time. This is different tarantulas in a different time.
Right.
And I am not bullshitting you here. This is a proper, true mind melter, man.
Okay.
These tarantulas caused them to fart to death.
All right, well, I mean, like, I remember watching a documentary about, you know, people getting bit by tarantulas. I was trying to get over my arachnophobia.
Yes.
And I think it's in Mexico. Their cure for it is to go out and party for the night.
Go out and party for the night?
Yeah, you go out and you get absolutely hammered.
Uh-huh.
And apparently the alcohol in your system breaks down the poison faster.
Well.
So there's my one for you.
Remember, these guys were all very pious because they were on a crusade of gods.
Come on, they had to have some kind of eel.
So, but not enough of it. So, here is my challenge to the community. Hmm. I have the table.
Yeah.
I have the crusaders.
Yeah, you have the bugs.
I have the spiders. In fact,
well,
I even
arachnids.
Have a little alternative spider thing that I'm thinking of painting up.
Uh-huh.
With a little base of spiders.
Nest markers?
So, what I want to know from you guys is what rule set would you use to play out this game of Crusaders versus Spiders, and then we're going to get Justin to play it. So this is in training, because me and you are someday going to go to the Holy Lands and we're going to go camping and see if we can fart ourselves to death as a result of tarantula bites. So we'll want to know, like, for example, could the Walking Dead rules be reconfigured to
possibly
have nests of tarantulas coming out and our little guys running around their tents trying to kill the tarantulas? Let me tell you how they dealt with it.
With fire?
No.
Really?
I know you would have dealt with it with fire. Well, fire and high-pitched female screaming.
Well, here's the thing. If they're farting themselves to death, you get a torch, get one of your mates, you make a flamethrower.
Yeah, you could. You could. What they did was they went out and they banged on their helmets really, really hard.
What?
Yeah, they banged on their helmets really, really hard to make lots of noise, like, ah, kind of noises and banging of helmets to chase the spiders away.
Right.
And I'm telling you, man, that is what's written in the historical records of they farted themselves to death, and when they weren't doing that, they were out banging on their helmets. I have melted his mind. Tell me the rules.
Coming to you from the center of Northwestern Europe, covering board games, war games, card games, and all that you love. It's the news.
Welcome back, Ben. Ben, I made you a fancy intro. You haven't seen it, man. He hasn't seen it yet. But everybody now knows that, you know, after 7 years of being the top journalist in the industry,
well,
I went out and made you a professional intro, professional to the level that suits your status in this industry, man. I blew our entire beer budget on getting that.
Oh, no beer.
Bear in mind with me here, the beer budget's massive.
Yes.
This is weird.
See, whenever Jerry came on team, that was inflation.
I'm pretty sure nobody at any point handed me a beer during any of the production of that.
No, right. No.
But the budget was gone.
So, Ben, you'll have to get to watch the show back, but yes. All I can say is you're welcome. You're welcome. Right.
Perfect.
Tell me some 40K news. So let's start as we mean to go on. What's happening in the world of 40K at the moment?
So one of the big things they're doing is they're going back to look at some of the stuff that they made to order sort of thing they do at the moment. And the latest selection of different offerings that are going to be done through the made to order system are the Ice Warriors of Valhalla. So anybody who remembers back in the day, I say back in the day, it wasn't actually that far away, but back in the day, there used to be lots of different Imperial Guard factions that you could play as that weren't Cadians. And now they're going to come back and deal with the Ice Warriors of Valhalla with a new set of releases. So you've got a whole bunch of new troopers, you've got some heavy weapon options, and there's also a couple of different characters as well. So you're going to have a sort of more standard general to play as, and also one of the characters from the faction called Kubrick Chekhnov, who was a leader of one of the sort of facets of the Ice Warriors of Valhalla. And of course, you're going to get to play all of these as part of a larger bundle, or you can get them as sort of individual packs as well that are going up for release this weekend and will be around for at least a week. And so it just gives you a chance to dive in and get some of those old metal models. As a lot of people are pointing out, it's amazing that these guys don't wear gloves, but they're just that hard. They live on a death world as well, so if anyone's familiar with the likes of the Catechins and stuff from the Imperial Guard, these guys live on an icy death world as well, which is impossible for, you know, the regular human to live on, but they make sure that people are stationed there as part of an army because you need to defend these planets as part of the Imperium, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you like the Ice Warriors of Valhalla, then there's some options there coming for the Imperial Guard this week.
So it's just a release for a week. Are they producing them in metal or are they
They're in metal. Yeah.
So they're producing them in metal and they're only available for a week.
Yeah, so if you've ever wanted to do the 592nd from Cathias Kane, now's your chance.
Yeah. And the
597, sorry.
Well, let's look at it this way. They need to do that because, you know, Cadia fell.
Oh, yeah.
So there aren't supposed to be any Cadians left now in 40K.
No, there are still some that are off planet and that were evacuated.
There are three. So the three chicken guys that they got off, you know, are there.
The
but
planet
the three
before
chicken
the guard,
Cadians
stop.
Do not make an army, Justin. Everybody's Cadian armies have to go in the bin.
No, they don't.
Straight in the bin.
Straight in the bin, and then we're going to replace them with Valhallans. Or is it War Games Atlantic do Le Grognards?
They do Le Grognards, yes.
Yes. If you have ever seen our Prusonians, we did this amazing Napoleonic's Imperial Guard-themed army of the Prusonians. And then War Games Atlantic went and took it one step better and created Le Grognards.
a whole barrel of Frenchies in great coats that can be anything from Napoleonic, because they've got the great coats and they've got the packs on.
Yeah.
And then they also have both the New Guard and Old Guard, so they've got the plain shako and the bearskin shakos.
Yes.
But then they also have...
Go Bearskins.
But I went to high school in White Bear Lake. Go Bears. Okay.
The French kepi. So like the French Foreign Legion kepi.
Oh.
And then they also have the First World War Adrian helmet with the peak on it. And then all of the heads also have gas mask variants, so you can go super sci-fi and have nothing but gas mask, or you can have bare faces if you want to have bare faces. But they're really nice as doing a little faction of your own.
Well worth checking on. And I think there's a ton of them in a box as well. So
I was also just going to say one of the other characters that they have also teased for this weekend that's going to be made as part of this made to order thing for the rest of the week is the old version of Commissar Yarek. So if you remember him, you know, lost his arm, got a new awesome power claw that's shaped like a crab claw. You can use him. This is also a little bit of a teaser for what's coming up in the next book for the Psychic Awakening, because they also showed off a model which was the little sort of banner bearer that fought alongside one Gazgul Mag Tharak or whatever his name is. He had a very long name. But hopefully that guy's going to be coming back, which means we maybe might see a new version of Commissar Yarrick, who's come back from the mighty crusade that he was on with the Black Templars at the end of the Armageddon War. So we'll see. But yeah, if you like your old-style guard, there's lots of options now.
Was it not that Yarrick actually stole that off Gazgul?
No.
Ripped his arm off and took it for himself?
No, it was off a different Orc warlord.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because when Gazgul attacked, he had to go and break the power claw out from where he'd retired and put it in a box under his bed.
Okay.
Yes. Right. Or less, yeah. The big news this week was where Privateer Press dropped their new game. It's called Neo Mechanica, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's a new sci-fi game from Privateer Press. Two players, 35 mil scale, so a little bit bigger. Mm. Check out these
images.
Those
look awesome. So.
It's like, holy smokes, I nearly fell off my chair when I saw them.
So, brand new game in a brand new universe.
Yes.
Well, it sounds like an interesting one. They have mentioned one of the flavors of the background from the sort of world of Warmerhordes in there, which is Cyrus. So maybe this is set in sort of like a far distant future, would be quite interesting. But as you're saying, this is sort of like their new take on a lot of the mechanics and stuff that you know and love from the world of Warmerhordes. But they've kind of updated them a little bit for Warcaster and Neo Mechanica, which is the new game. One of the big things that they have changed with this one is that there's going to be like a customizable card deck that you'll use, which you'll prepare before you get down to the game table, and this will be full of all your sort of activations and spells and all that kind of thing that you'll be using on the table. It'll also have regular dice, so if you like dice chucking and stuff, that's going to be in there too. It's also going to use alternative activation rather than sort of like an I-go-you-go system, so there's a little bit more sort of like dynamism and activation between the two different players at the table. But yeah, as you say, the models that we've seen so far are looking very nice. You've got the Alliance, who are the slightly more sort of hyper, high sci-fi looking faction. And then there's also the Marchers, who have got a little bit more of like a rough and ready feel to them. It would have maybe been nice to see like a slightly more alien style faction shown off as one of their sort of like starting ones out the gate for this. But if you like the idea of like big hulking warjacks, because they've still continued the name, and you like the idea of these sort of like sci-fi characters fighting on the tabletop using mechanics that are very similar to Warmerhordes, then this sounds like a very good one indeed. It's going to be coming to Kickstarter, so watch out for that, and hopefully we're going to be seeing some more sort of gameplay soon, because it would be nice to see sort of how it plays a little bit earlier on. I think that'd be good. But
No, I've got to say, I'm excited to see where this goes. It's
very pretty looking.
Oh, gorgeous, gorgeous models.
It's a massive departure from their previous style of sculpts.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Next up, interesting one for the historical connoisseurs among us. Peter's Paperboys and Wofun Games join forces. I don't recollect hearing about Peter's Paperboys before. But Wofun, they're those dudes that do them acrylic, acrylic standee kind of guys. This stuff here, check this out. Now, the Wofun guys, these are the guys that I want to go to get my Waterloo armies from. I think it's the only way I'll ever be able to field Waterloo is to go this way. And it's just check them out. They're just so cool. So what's the team up here, Jerry? What's going on?
Well, Peter Dennis, the guy who's responsible for most of the box art that you've seen on Osprey and that sort of thing for years. Peter's been doing Peter's Paperboys for a while. In fact, he's got his own website, which is Peter's Paperboys, where he does stuff. But he also has a publishing thing with a company where he does like 54 mil sort of size. So you can either buy from him and then you scale and print them yourself. And then you have to sit down. They are literally paper, so you cut them out, glue the two halves to flat, and then you've got little tiny paper standees. They're a very, very cheap way of getting stuff on the table. The guys at Wofun, they did a set of Peter Dennis standees for free in War Games Illustrated a couple of years ago, and they literally got those because they were available to everybody. They weren't copyrighted, and they put them on a set of their acrylic stuff and sent it to Peter and went, "We really want to work with you. you knock out stuff at a rate of knots, and you're, you know, his art style is superb, and he's already working on that 2D look. Mm-hmm. We'd like to do a signature range using your designs, because the previous stuff that they have done was designed in-house and has a more, I'm not going to say cartoony, because it's not cartoon, but it has a very distinct style, whereas Peter has this very natural pen and ink and watercolor sort
of Peter's reveal. Is an illustrative style.
Yeah.
The Wolf on stuff that I have seen has kind of this mix between an illustration and a photographic face.
Yes, yeah.
In it, which it can be a bit uncanny looking
at the
time.
Which one is it we have the picture of?
Well, this is
let's see the picture.
This
again.
Is Peter Dennis's stuff. So this is the one that they went, well, you've done these, we've actually just gone ahead and printed them to show you how they would look. Can we go ahead and do this? And he looked at it, because he said himself on his Facebook, I think I said it a couple of days ago on his Facebook page. He looked at it and he went, well, the people who buy my book and buy the stuff from my website are doing it because it's cheap as chips. Mm. And it's a really, really cheap way of getting into it. This is slightly more expensive. It's sort of halfway between plastic and metal sort of mm-hmm. figures in the same scale. So he was going, well, it's not going to cannibalize my sales. It's not going to impact me, because he doesn't think there's a huge crossover. So yeah, go for it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think they've announced what the initial ranges are going to be. I want to say it's...
Yeah, so the test ones they did that you can see there in the pictures of the Jacobites and the mm. Redcoats, but the actual range that they're going to be doing first off is going to be for the Texan Independence War, which he's already done stuff before in paper, but obviously they're going to do it in this new acrylic style as well. And hopefully that means they'll start to expand it to cover the rest of the stuff that Peter Dennis has done as well for Paper Boys. But
well, the thing is, they can do it that quickly.
Yeah,
with Peter already has a massive catalog out there. Mm-hmm. That if he's not having to design new stuff, if they're just taking his designs, mm-hmm. coloring them, and then putting them onto the plexi mm-hmm. themselves, they should be able to catch up on ranges very quickly. And things like the cannons are the only ones that I think suffer a bit in the paper mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. they are essentially two dimensional. So mm-hmm. if you're looking at them from the front, they don't look great. I know for his larger 54mm paper ones, they actually make little firing cannons like. H.G. Wells had, where you would roll a tube and then put an elastic band in it to fire. And it looks great, but they're doing it in the plexiglass. They have that bit of depth. They've got like two to three mil sort of depth, so there's width there. Whenever you have a cannon face onto you, it's not disappearing into nothing. Mm. So very exciting to see where they go, because I love Peter's artwork, and I also really like the stuff I got from Wild Fun for my ancients. So I could quite happily pick up several of these.
Nice. Mm. I thought the Privateer Press news was big. Mm. Mm-hmm. And then even more news has arrived. There's a massive piece of news from the guys at Firelock Games, okay? So the Firelock Games Raise the Black, which is a Blood and Plunder expansion. They're basically moving to all plastics and stuff. And
huge step.
Two-player starter sets, the works. Ben, can you fill us in?
Yeah, so we got the news about what they're going to be doing with this. It's going to be coming to Kickstarter, and it's going to be a new sort of expansion and a new sort of like updated rulebook as well. It's going to be pushing the timeline on from what you know of the period that they've been working on so far. And it's going to be sort of focusing, as you say, on a lot of other stuff beyond just the historical sort of elements. They're going to be doing a whole range of new plastic models. So a lot of the stuff you're going to be getting is going to be moving on from the metal that they've done. And they're going to be doing really highly customizable sets, which would be really awesome to see. Really good for those people that want to try and mix and match stuff and get a little bit more dynamism out of their sculpts as well. They're also going to be doing plastic ships. So a lot of people know that they've been doing their really nice resin ones. They're going to be moving up to doing the plastic versions of those as well, which sounds very, very cool indeed. They're going to be doing a whole bunch of new characters and an extra load of goodies as well. The key thing for a lot of people, actually, is that they're going to be working on the two-player starter set, which will see Blackbeard go up against the British Royal Navy, led by Robert Maynard. So if you like the idea of a big clash between one of those iconic characters of pirate history, Blackbeard, and the British Royal Navy, then this will be a very awesome entry point for that. It's all going to be coming to Kickstarter, which sounds like a good option. They've been doing a lot of stuff before, so using like... community funded stuff in the past. I think we looked at it in a previous weekend, which was pretty awesome. But this will be a really nice return to Kickstarter for them. Obviously, they've done some really good stuff in the past with the likes of Oaken Iron and stuff for Blood and Plunder before as well. So this is a really nice step in the right direction for them. And I think it will be a really good way for people to get down to the tabletop and play some piratical adventures. So
Yeah. I think it's massive for them because an awful lot of people have looked at Blood and Plunder. I know even in here at the club, but because the entire forces are all metal at the mm-hmm. moment, you get some people who don't like metal, which is fair enough. But there's a bit of a cost as well because the basic metal set is relatively pricey, even though you don't need a huge amount because it's more or less skirmish on the tabletop. Mm-hmm. But between that and the resin ships, it can be seen as prohibitive. Mm-hmm. Whereas being able to come in at a lower price point with full plastics, I think could actually blow up the game.
Does this mean you're actually going to have to build the miniatures, yes. though? Because the great thing about the one cast metals is you just pop them out and paint them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, I don't know. I think a lot of people are probably going to look at plastic and go, that's an easier proposition to actually just do hobby with.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people look at metal and go, oh, it's metal. I don't know.
But yeah, it's not only that.
But then you get a Kraken set coming out of Vitrix, like the Vikings and stuff, right? And you think, oh, I'll order that. It's great. And then it comes in, there's loads of tiny wee numbers and you have to stick it all together.
So you're giving me a headache even thinking about the tiny wee numbers.
That's true, but equally, producing your stuff in plastic makes the logistics so much easier because it's easier to ship plastics all over the world. You know, there's a logistical element to this.
Definitely going to be lighter. For sure. Mm-hmm.
This could be absolutely massive for Firelock Games. I'm so excited about this because Blood and Plunder. It's just going to be so cool. And the plastic ships, holy smokes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was also just going to say as well that from what I know anyway from the guys at Firelock, they're never going to be doing any of this to then invalidate anything they've done before. So if you have all the stuff from the metal and the characters and that kind of thing, it's all going to be scaled to the same size. And it's all going to look the same in terms of proportions and stuff. So you can easily transport a lot of what you've done there over. And also that means you'll hopefully get a little bit of a mix and match between some of the stuff they've done in the past and some of the stuff they're going to do in the future as well. Yeah. So there's lots and lots of sort of nitty gritty that you can dive into with this one and get stuck into it. I know we absolutely love Blood and Plunder here. We've done lots of videos and that kind of thing. So go and check that out. Yeah.
Right. Now, I am wondering what they're going to do because the way they cast their metal miniatures, it already has its base on there. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, are they going to do a specific cast set of those nice bases that you already get with the metal stuff?
Well, that's a question.
Because
the wee bases don't have very much. Like, if you have wee bases, you're gonna in metal. You mean?
Are they gonna do like a plastic sprue in that style?
The thing about the Blood and Plunder range is they're very small bases. So I'm wondering if they continue to provide metal ones, so you get a bit of center of gravity. Yeah, so they're less likely to topple over.
That's a thought.
Or you could stick them on pennies.
Penny's too big.
Is it Penny too big? Yeah. Their
bases are smaller than a penny. Not by much, but they are a little bit smaller.
Mm. Well, if anything, if they do metal bases with the plastic minis, this will make them even less. This will make them even more stable.
Yeah, the center of gravity will go way down. Plastic ships, though. Just before we skim over that, really happening?
Yep.
Yes. Yeah, apparently so.
Big ass plastic ships.
Apparently so.
I'm at the very least hoping for a sloop.
I can't comment on the size of the ass of the ship.
Yeah. But we sure you will whenever they come out. So
we can do our test again. Will they float?
We will do the test.
I hope we get some pictures of these.
I think they will.
I'm just going to read out exactly what they said in the press release for the ships, just to let you know. So it says, a two-section ship with a variety of rig options allowing to build several types of ship out of a single kit. So
rig options, Jerry. You'll love that.
All right, well, hang on. A two-section ship. I think, if I remember it, the sloop is a three-section ship in-game, so it's probably something slightly smaller, maybe?
Yeah. But, hey, it's
by two,
just to start. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can just build it out. Just make a big, massive oil tanker.
If you need an extender warren, that's your problem.
Bring in the tank now.
This week, we're giving away... The Dungeon Book of Battle Mats.
Yes, we are.
Jerry, do you have it so we can have a flick through that bad boy?
I really do have it. I've actually got two, because it's a set of two.
Mm-hmm. Happy days. Mm. So there's two books.
There's two books
in the pack. Yeah.
So you get a slipcase, you get a delightful set of two books, and the books themselves have. Well, volume one has 40 pages. Of generic fantasy dungeon crawlingness, as volume two also has 40 pages, and they can be combined. So you start with things like the blanks, which are...
Are the pages in volume one and the pages in volume two different?
Different, but similar.
Similar, but
So essentially, if you've got a And this probably won't show up in the clue scam. Oh, there we go, actually. So the clue scam shows you it's what, a 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. So you're a 12 by 12 grid, so a foot square.
Yes.
Each double page spread is of a similar design.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can go and find its equivalent. So if I go page 13 and 14 here, dum, 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 too far. So if I go there.
So do you mean like this on screen, Jerry?
Yeah. So you can actually then start to rotate.
Mm-hmm.
So we can put this together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just using what we have here.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. And because of the way the books go.
You now have a 2x2.
You've got a 2x2 grid, but you can also then rotate because all of the pages are made so that every option will add, or if you want to make an L shape or, you know, a T section, they'll still all connect together.
Oh.
So you can plan out how your layouts are going to go to work. Yeah. So you're not having to worry about something that jars if you put two pages together in any order. They should always still map up.
Hey, Warren, flip the page there.
The print quality is beautiful.
Print quality.
Even there, flipping just between that page and that page, that's still pretty close.
Yeah.
The print quality. Oh, look at this one. Check this one out. Mm. That's HeroQuest. Mm. That is HeroQuest, man.
I'm getting a very HeroQuest-y vibe.
Oh, I love that.
So
the lighting effects are beautiful in it.
And the books themselves are all dry wipeable. So if you want to start writing on them or drawing on them, you can.
Yeah.
Just don't use a Sharpie.
Find the equivalent page of that, Jerry.
Where are we on? 17. 17. So
they do match up then. Oh, look at it.
Yeah.
Cut to that.
A nice and there spiral we go. Bound.
So have a look at that. Oh, just check that out.
That really is very HeroQuest-y, isn't it?
Isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
I love that. It's about the size of a HeroQuest board, too. Right.
Probably a bit bigger.
We're giving this away this week,
mm-hmm.
but to sweeten the deal, I'm going to chuck in a 70-piece terrain crate with it.
Mm.
But I'm not going to show you that, because I'd be here all day showing you 70 pieces, but I am going to show you this. So this is the Wizard's Study.
The Wizard's Study. And this is inside the terrain crate that we're giving away.
There's bits of this in it. Mm. So we're going to take this little flat dungeon and make it 2.5D.
Which is something we're always fans of.
So Warren's favourite D.
Yeah, yes. Let's say that is.
So if you pull that forward, Jerry, so we can decorate a room.
Yeah. We can have, where's our door? Our door's there. Do you want our door there? Let's start
bookcase.
Adding in a bookcase. I don't want the other, it can go into one of the other rooms.
See, I kind of want the Sims music playing right now.
Yeah.
Just when you're in build mode.
This is my favorite part of dungeon crawling. Just getting stuck into this is just immense.
I have a mirror over by the door. You always need to check to make sure your cloak's in the right order for you before you go into.
This is a nice touch.
Yeah.
Oh, the ladder to get up to the top floor. Papa.
Where does it go? Oh, that's the wrong way around. This is it.
That's one of the wheelie ladders.
It's wheelie good.
It is really, really good.
That was wheelie bad.
Well, thank you. That's what we're here for.
So Terrain Crate was a successful Kickstarter by Mantic. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's one of the most fundamentally awesome products that ever came out of Kickstarter.
That's a pool of water. It's more blood. Over the floor.
The sheer range that Mantic have unlocked in that Terrain Crate range, and there's been different kind of phases of Terrain Crate. So there's some post-apocalyptic stuff. There's the dungeon stuff. There's
battlefield stuff. Yeah. If you want to do a jousting knights tournament, there's lists and tents and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
and the nice thing is, if you're into your RPGs but not into your painting, they're pre-colored to a solid color. So this is all brown because it's all mostly wood.
Yes.
There's a set that's done in like an off-white color, which is all marble. So there's columns, pillars, steps, fountains. So you can set that all down. The there's a gray set for stonework, caverns is the word I was after. So you've got all these pieces, and you can go, because there is a ridiculous amount of detail in these. You can actually see. So there's books there, and the books aren't all upright. Some have fallen over, some are leaning on themselves. So if you want to sit there and start painting all the volumes and numbering them on the spine, you can do that. Or if you have a life You could probably just go ahead and throw those down if you want to throw them down, just as in the brand. It's a very quick way of doing
it. I quite like this one because you've got a chest in here, a wizard's hat, some potions, a crystal ball, some wine.
Did you just steal that from his
Forget
study?
That. Yeah. Give me that. What is this thing called?
I want to say it's an ossuary.
Is it an ossuary?
No, an ossuary is where you put the bones.
Is it an astrolete or something?
It's an orrery.
An orrery.
I think it's an orrery or something.
An orrery! Yeah.
It's like, because they've got like a massive version of this at this in
the planetarium.
No, I was going to say in the new, what is it, Gelflings? What are they called again?
Dark Crystal.
There's a massive version of that.
It's bad, yeah, that, it's really bad cool. that you couldn't remember the name, but I remember it based on Gelflings.
Gelflings.
Yeah.
I have some of this stuff. I actually treated myself and the kids to a box of Terrain Crate. So I've actually painted up some of this.
All right.
So what I did was I just primed it a nice dark brown from a can from the Army Painter range, and then I just dusted it with to give it a zenith. Yeah.
So like then, a fur bones, a leather brown.
Yeah. So it was like a leather brown, and then I dusted it with like a skeleton bone or a white. And then I just went in with the Army Painter wash, and I just did that to get down into the thing, and that was it. It literally we were going on holiday, and the day that we were leaving to go on holiday, I came in here to the studio in the morning, and just quickly painted it all, and it was primed, painted, and dry within about 2 to 3 hours. That was able to actually pack it into our dungeon bag and then head home and pick them all up and take them on holiday. And we took our dungeon with us. It is really, really cool stuff.
I'm just having a quick scan.
Yeah.
Just to see the
look battle map.
What do you see the different variations of some of the
Come
stuff?
Come on, we'll flick through this a bit more. Look.
Here, I'll hold it. Yeah. Right? Cut to me. There. So let's get a flick through it. So this is your old school RPGing right here. Okay. And then you're into some of this greenery with a little bit of water. Check that one out. That's
a ruined temple. There's some kings being pushed over.
That's your Wrath of the Titan stuff in there, man. Mm-hmm. Hero Quest. I love these ones. These are great. Look at that.
Yeah, uphill and down deal. There's a bit of depth in
the ones with the really strong source lightning.
Oh, yeah. Love this one too. The source lighting is beautiful, though. It really is such a nice touch. Oh, there's a lovely one there. Look at the mat.
Tony actually borrowed this when he was running the RPG at the club earlier in the month. And he was using the fact that there's a depth on the book because he had his plans for just a plain, just like the very first two pages where you've got a plain square mat. And then he went in and had these. So they actually had the raised area going up into the book and into the castle, essentially, that they were exploring.
Just check it out. This is a wonderfully designed set of dungeon tiles. Look at that one.
Yeah, nobody wants to end up in there. I particularly don't like the way there's what appears to be a drain, draining blood.
Full of blood,
Well, no, hang on, that's just good engineering.
Here, turn it
right
over there, do you see?
Yeah.
Do you know what this is? This is like the bit in Dune where he pulls the heart plug out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is one way of doing it. But yeah,
I don't know why you dislike that. That's just good engineering.
Oh, look at this. Look at the poppy colours.
Check out one. Yeah.
It's all about the lava. And I don't care how good those grills are because this one's already been subsumed by lava. So that's not going to help anybody in any way, shape, or form. But it's a gorgeous set of books.
Wait, I love this. This is brilliant.
Oh, dear God. Oh. Are you happy with your lot of life? There's the sewers. And what appears to be Robo Rally. That's just for queuing up to the dungeon.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's for British RPGs
British
right
RPGs
there.
Just queuing. But it's an adorable set of two books and some lucky git is getting these.
To be in with a chance of winning, let me just remind you, all you have to do is comment on this episode, hit like, subscribe, and please, if you can do us a favour and share the episode with folk that you think might enjoy it. It really helps us out because Google and YouTube just don't disseminate these things anymore because we talk about things like World War II. So we just get stifled.
Yeah.
So we rely on you guys to help spread the episodes to get them out there.
It's great. Spreading our love.
Yeah.
What could be better than spending the whole weekend telling everybody about On Tabletop?
I can tell you what would be better.
What?
Warren meets Matt. Okay, Jerry, this week we're looking at The Walking Dead Town Mat.
Yes.
From Deep Cut Studios.
It's small but perfectly formed.
It comes in various sizes. This is a neoprene version at 3x3, which is perfect for Walking Dead. But also, we've been discussing this, it would be good for some of those moderns games that are kicking around at the moment as well.
Oh, it would be great for the likes of Spec Ops and Delta 1-0 and all of those sort of things, especially if people want to do the... No, Wolverine's taking on the Russians. Mm-hmm. That's all good. So
we have furnished it this time with Homeland Apocalypse buildings from foreground. Mm. And they just absolutely fit in beautifully. Right, let's talk about the detail on the mat. Where do you start? So you have road layouts, which means that, you know, immediately you know where you can place stuff and where you shouldn't place stuff.
Yes.
Again, that narrative... It's always important to me in a mat because it just helps me quickly lay something out. But there's still enough open spaces and flexibility in it to really kind of change up how you go about laying out. And honestly, you could play this mat open if you wanted, just putting down just a few bits. It is really that good. Here, you can see the grass, and we have lots of grass and nice kind of autumn leaves and detritus lying all over the place. Really, really nice. You've got your footpaths. Nice contrast there, the footpaths, with this beautiful shading, which then takes it down into the road, and you can see various cracks and things in the road. Where you start to get that more kind of apocalyptic kind of a feel, you're either in Apocalypse or in parts of Northern Ireland, because you start to get all the cracks and the potholes in there.
It's very run down, yeah. But that's what you want to see. And it means, like you say, if you don't want to put a load of stuff on here, that could just be an open, damaged area, or you can quite happily start to mask those off by popping just shops and little kiosks and stands and stores and things like that in and around it.
It's mats like this these days, because we have so much choice outside of the grim dark, mats like this just really come into play in having in your collection. Like, we've mentioned moderns. Absolutely, you could use it for moderns. You could use it for The Walking Dead. You could use it for Mars Attacks.
Mars Attacks, yep, definitely. Marvel
Crisis Protocol just fits beautifully. Get down here, do you see Tony Stark? So we have Tony here getting ready to kick some ass. And I love it. Check out Spidey. So Spidey's sitting there ready to do his thing. Yeah.
Unfortunately, Doc Ock hasn't been paying attention to where the web slinger's gone to. And even though it does say that it's The Walking Dead, the only real, you're not looking at a ton of blood splatter everywhere. The only real sort of idea that you've got that there is a bit of an apocalypse or something has happened is that the growth, the greenery has become a bit more unkempt and is starting to spill onto the pavement. So there's no reason why this isn't just autumn in somewhere that's a bit run down. Or if you want to have it that it is the overgrown apocalypse, then you can do that as well very easily. So
the beauty of that is any conflict in its early phases is going to look like this.
Yeah, it's going to start disrupting normal day-to-day life. People aren't going to be out strimming their lawns if there's a load of Soviets coming over the horizon.
No, absolutely not. Right, we have... Again, some bursts of colour in the mat. So over here, you can start to see some of the yellow parking lines. They really pop, and it just adds a lovely piece of life to the mat. What I particularly like is that the lines here are actually a slightly darker shade of yellow than the more worn down lines where the cars are actually driving over it. I think that's a beautiful attention to detail that the actual weathering almost of the design has been tempered based on the potential amount of usage that it would have seen.
The reality of where traffic is actually going to flow and where you're going to see that wear and tear. And even the likes of this, where we have just a very slight amount of greenery at the edge, it almost frames it. You don't get this sudden stop. It's not a jarring, the roads come to here and then nothing. There's nothing else. You get this sort of edging the framework that you know, the town continues. So even though you're only playing on a small section of it, there is more to see.
Yeah.
You know, you're taking a snapshot of Middle America.
Like I said, comes in various sizes. Mm. It's an incredible map. Go and check it out over on Deep Cut.
Even more news, bitches.
Yep, it's more news. Ben, Mythos is back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the pre-orders are now available from the guys at War Cradle, who have taken over production of Mythos. So they're bringing it back with a couple of new sets to begin with. So you're going to get one of them, which is called the Rules and Gubbins set, which I think is very nicely done. And this contains everything you need in order to play the game. So it's going to have the rulebook in it. It's going to have all the tokens, the accessories, and all that kind of thing. Then, because there's such a wide range of different factions that are coming to the world of Mythos in the future, they're also going to do a selection of different faction sets that you can pick up. Each of them done in their sort of like new material that they obviously use for the likes of Wild West Exiles and that kind of thing. But you're going to be able to get your hands on two iconic factions from the game, so the Priory and the Hidden Ones. So if you're like your slightly more investigator side of things in the world of like Lovecraftian Cthulhu-ness, then you've got that option there. Or if you like the slightly more gribbly and weird side of things, and you've also got the Hidden Ones as well. Each of these will come with all the sort of cards and extra bits and pieces that you need in order to play those different factions, but then they can be combined with the Rules and Gubbins set in order for you to sit down and play the game. There's going to be a lot more stuff coming out for this in the coming months, so watch out for that. But this is all sort of like priming everybody to dive right back into the world of Mythos, which I know was a fan favorite with a lot of people. Now, it's a little bit more of an underground game, but I know that a lot of people really liked it on the site here as well. So, yeah.
Underground. What's
that?
Like Tombstalker creepy thing.
Yep. It's a big ass bug of awesomeness.
Probably is what it's called. Nyarlathotep would be my guess.
One of the cool things we're actually doing for this is that they actually looked at some of the stuff that had been done and sort of processed by Paranoid, who originally was in control of the game. Mm. And they're actually going to be bringing a whole bunch of new characters into the mix as well for all the faction sets. So they're a little bit different from the ones that you had before. But if you actually do have the miniatures that you played with originally, you can actually use these in the new game as well. So everything's sort of scaled and stuff to that. So there's plenty of crossover as well if you are someone who really loved the old game, want to get some of the slightly more updated sculpts and stuff to go alongside what you already have. So yeah, lots of cool stuff.
I remember I picked up a set of the Priory for myself one year at Salute, and they are gorgeous miniatures, really delicate, and just gorgeous, gorgeous detail on them for the original ones.
Are these coming out in plastic, Ben, or...?
Yeah, so they'll be in the same sort of material that you've seen for Wild West Exiles, which I believe is like a plastic, so
Nice. Elder Scrolls. I have some Elder Scrolls news for you. So Modiphius have some more Elder Scrolls on the way. So the first wave, I think, is going to be based on the Skyrim Civil War, Ben?
Yeah, so we've had a look already at sort of the stuff they're going to be doing as part of like intro boxes for a whole range of different sort of play styles. So they're going to be doing things for sort of more competitive play, which is where the kind of Skyrim Civil War comes in. Because you'll be able to build up the forces of both the Imperials and the Stormcloaks, who are fighting for control of Skyrim, if anyone's played the Elder Scrolls game. But they're also going to be doing some stuff later on down the road for both solo and co-op play as well, which is something they've done for the likes of Fallout Wasteland Warfare and that kind of thing too. So as well as all the additional boxes you're going to be able to get for a bunch of Imperial soldiers and Stormcloak soldiers, you're also going to be able to get your hands on a set of characters that could be used either as potentially heroes, like your own take on the Dovahkiin, or maybe they could be used as bandits and stuff that are going to be hiding around in the ruins. They're also going to be doing a set of additional Draugr, so if you're going to be doing a lot of dungeon delving, then you can go and pick up those awesome undead guys that you always run into in the tomes in Skyrim, which will be very cool to see. The focus on what they're doing with the game sort of throughout this year and into next year is they're going to be trying to tell the story from Skyrim sort of in order. So it starts with this kind of idea of the Civil War, and you're going to be able to play out things like the Siege of Whiterun, for example, which is one of the big first pivotal battles you fight once you've chosen a side in the game. But you're also going to be able to delve into some of the sort of side quests that you do in that as well. So as well as the sort of main storyline, you'll also be able to do a whole bunch of the side activities that you did, so delving for treasure and that kind of thing, finding some of the legendary artifacts and stuff as well. The interesting thing for this is that obviously, when it comes to the Civil War, one of the big focuses that's going on alongside that is the Awakening of all the Dragons again. Mm. And I really, really hope that we see Modiphius do a massive dragon, because they've done some big, massive models for Fallout, Wasteland Warfare, and I hope they do exactly the same kind of thing for Skyrim. That could be very, very cool indeed. They're also going to be developing things later on down the line and telling a little bit more of a story. So one of the things they said is that the next sort of phase after the Civil War is going to be one called Steam and Shadow, which I imagine is going to introduce some sort of Dwemer stuff into the mix.
Yeah.
So if you like your clockwork dwarves from the world of Elder Scrolls, you'll hopefully be able to see those on the tabletop as well. So.
Justin.
Yes.
Pop up that first image for me again there to see it, is it of the knights.
So that's the Imperial side of things.
So go to the next one.
And then you've got your Stormcloaks.
No, mm-hmm. Yes.
So they're the rebels.
Embiggen the Stormcloaks for me if you can.
I will.
Let's see if we're yes.
Endeavor to embiggen.
Right. Okay. That guy down in the bottom, let me see, as you're watching this, the bottom right-hand corner.
Oh, everyone loves him on social media.
He's amazing, man. You just need to take the sword away and, I don't know, give him like a flower or something. It's like...
I don't know, he's fighting like a Bravos.
But he's saying that direction.
But it's like the... Oh, God. He is the Jean-Luc Picard of that army.
It's slapped in the face by Beverly Crusher.
This is it. Yes, he's got all the elegance.
So is he standing there just going, make it so?
Engage.
Engage.
Make them dead.
I love that guy. I think that is just brilliant. He's like straight out of Monty Python. All I'm expecting is someone behind him with the coconuts going
He's just edging up to go like this.
Oh!
Take that, you fiend.
I shall fart in your general direction. Fantastic stuff. Fantastic stuff. Right. We have some RPG news. Okay, this is a solo co-op traditional RPG, Ben?
Okay, yeah, so Ironsworn is a role-playing game that has taken everybody by storm. It's blown up on Twitch and all sorts of things like that. A lot of people playing it as sort of actual plays and things. And the reason is because it sort of goes across a whole bunch of different sort of styles of role-playing. So it can be played as a sort of traditional one with a games master and then a group of players. It can also be played co-op, or it can be played as a solo adventure as well. And this is all done through the use of like a massive book, which is completely free to download. The core rules are completely free, which is full of tables and diagrams and all sorts of things like that, which will allow you to play the game with absolutely zero prep. So you don't need to do any planning beforehand. You just have to maybe have an idea of the kind of character you want to play in your mind. But as soon as you sit down to play and you've learned the rules, you can just go for it and see where the story takes you. This is made even more exciting because the sort of setting for Ironsworn is the idea that you are these lone warriors that have to set out into this vast, horrible wilderness in order to try and stop something dark and shadowy, a little bit sort of like mixing the idea of, I guess you'd say, like Dark Souls with basically every grimdark setting you could ever think of. It's very Viking, it's very Norse, it's very deadly, it's very bloody, and your character will probably die. But the sort of whole focus is on the fact that you're going to be playing one of these Ironsworn, these sworn warriors that have to head out, fight the darkness, and hopefully come back alive. The interesting thing that came out recently is that the guy behind it has also produced an expansion for the game, which allows you to get stuck into the game in a little bit more detail with what's called Delve. So the Delve version of this game sort of adds a little bit more of like a dungeon delving sort of adventure into the mix. So you'll be able to go into a lot more catacombs and find all sorts of different treasures. And you can also use a lot of the stuff that you find in the Delve expansion and tie it back into the original Ironsworn as well. So you can use it on the overworld as well as just sort of like down in the darkness as well, which sounds very cool indeed. As I say, the role-playing game in its core rulebook is completely free to download. So if you want to go and give it a go, as I say, it's completely open to solo play. There's a lot of people who have been playing it online, really enjoying it. So dive in, check it out, see what you think, and have a go with it. That's the only reason, that's the only way you'll learn of all these different sort of role-playing games out there, is giving it a go.
So, yeah. So Jerry, you're going to have to just go for incidental NPC meat shields now.
No. Why would I?
Well, normally it's a player character who uses your meat shield. Now you'll have to use an NPC meat shield. Oh,
you can play that in a variety of ways. I can still throw yous in front of the bus. Or insert purple worm of your choice.
I do like the prospect of having an RPG with zero prep.
Yeah.
I think that's an interesting... For today's modern world, I think it's a very interesting...
It's one of the really interesting about this is that once you see people actually start to play the game and you follow along with what they're doing, like going through all the tables and developing things, it means that you see a world growing before your eyes as you're playing, because you start to, you think, oh, okay, so my character's going to head out through the woods. you roll to see what's on the other side of the woods. Maybe you find a town or something that you have to name it and all that kind of thing. And it starts to really develop a world that you can play in both within Ironsworn and then maybe take that and play it in different settings as well. So it's almost as much a creation tool as it is a role-playing game, which I think is a really fascinating idea.
I've played a game like that before that was labeled as a GM-less RPG, so that everybody was sitting around. It did get very dice-rolly.
Did it?
There was an awful lot of time of rolling, and then you roll to see what that roll means, and then you roll to see what, you know, you've arrived at this town, and this town has X number of buildings with a population of Y, and
yeah,
it can be very table-heavy, so it'll be interesting to see if this has gone this well. Yeah.
There's a nice level of sort of like mitigation within stuff as well. So a lot of it is driven by player choice, which I think is one of the key things here, is to say, because you don't want it to be entirely luck-based. Mm. That would be horrifying. Mm. But there are a lot of sort of ways that player agency can be involved, and there's a lot of mitigation based on the kind of character you build as well. So that everything you do has an impact on what's happening going forward in Ironsworn. So
fascinating. It wasn't so much the luck that we ran into a problem with, it was just it became tedious after a while that you were rolling for everything.
Yeah. Just progressively generate it then.
Yeah.
Right. Mm. Painting competition. Mm-hmm. Brand new painting competition being launched by Parabellum for their Conquest range. Yeah. Now, this is a monthly competition via the social media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is something that Parabellum War Games have set up. Every month they're going to have a different theme, and the idea is that you'll paint up something, you'll submit it via social media using the hashtag Colors of Conquest, which we'll have down in the show notes as well, just so you remember it and you copy it over as well. And you might win yourself something awesome from the World of Conquest at the same time. It'll be a really nice way to see what everyone's painting within the World of Conquest, because there's loads of really awesome armies out right now. There's four of them at the very moment, but there's going to be a lot more stuff coming out throughout the rest of the year as well. The current focus for February is on single infantry miniatures. All you need to do is paint up something that you enjoy, take a picture of it from the front and the Lloyd view from behind, and you'll be able to put it onto social media, either via Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or whatever you want, and they will find it out, and maybe you'll win something awesome. The competition runs until February the 29th right now, so if you've still got plenty of time to get involved and show us your painting.
Sorry. Well, you've 9 days. That's
enough to paint a single infantry figure.
I'd love to
paint something short.
Right. Let's have a look at a couple of Kickstarters, okay? Yeah, okay. So, Ben, we've sent you out in our usual fashion for you to hunt down the two or three greatest Kickstarters of the week, okay? Right. No pressure. No pressure.
But we will judge you on this.
We're very judgmental. Mm. What is the best of the best that you've picked out this week?
Okay, so I've become one of the Ironsworn, and I've headed out on the Kickstarter to try and find something interesting. And the first of these is from Monolith. Now, you might remember that they had a Kickstarter for their sort of player versus player idea they had for their worlds.
Yes.
But they've now come back to Kickstarter, they've listened to the community, and they've done a new book and a new box, which is called Conan the Conqueror. Now, this Kickstarter is focused on the idea of creating a new bunch of content for those people that backed Kickstarter originally and want to develop the adventure mode for the game. So this is going to come with a whole bunch of options for the sort of like one versus many idea that everyone will know from Conan. But it also helps to develop things on the solo and cooperative side as well. So there's going to be 6 brand new adventures for you to play in adventure mode, which is the sort of standard way of playing the game. And then there's also going to be 7 new solo and cooperative play scenarios for you to play as well. This also comes as part of a new sort of box set that includes a whole bunch of extra miniatures as well. You can also get the core game if you missed out the first time and buy that and all the additional options as well. They're also doing a sort of expansion for this on top of everything as part of the Kickstarter, which is called Tales of the Red Brotherhood. And this focuses on the idea of Conan being a pirate and heading out on the high seas. There's going to be a whole bunch of new boards and monsters and all that thing too. The thing that I really like about this, and it's funded because obviously I think the community were really behind this one, is that they've basically gone back to what everybody wanted and tried to expand upon the game that was, quite frankly, an awesome product. Yeah. I really enjoy Conan. I've got a copy of The King played somewhere. Really enjoy playing it. I've played it a couple of times now. But one of the key things I wanted was a lot more content to play once I got through that base game. And this kind of really offers that to everybody on the tabletop again. But yeah, if you like the idea of playing Conan, you missed out the first time, you want to dive in, or you already have the game from the previous Kickstarter, then you can go and check out this Kickstarter and see what you think. So,
it's a heck of a product, I've got to say. Mm-hmm. If you go back and look at some of their unboxings and stuff that we have done on Conan, it's just enormous.
Yeah,
absolutely. I was going to say, one of the other things I should mention as well is that they've actually really dived into the minutiae of the rules as well. So if you were one of those people that had problems with the rules originally when it came out, they've done a lot of tweaking, they've done a lot of updating, and it plays a lot smoother, and there's a lot less sort of questions and FAQ things coming to the mix as well. So they've really refined the product of Conan going forward, which I think is really nice, and hopefully a lot more people will get involved and try it out. So
there we go. Right, what's next, Ben? I'm going to give you a pass on that one. I think that's a good choice. Okay,
so we've gone from a massive Kickstarter.
Yes.
To a lot smaller of a Kickstarter.
Okay.
So this is a Kickstarter for a game, I guess you'd say it's more of a system, called Delve. And this is by someone called Anna Blackwell. And this is a solo game that you play by yourself, perfect for travel and that kind of thing, where you will be, as you might imagine, delving down into a dwarven, possibly not dwarven, hold. Maybe that's the reason I picked it.
Yeah.
In search of a treasure called the Void Crystal. The sort of basic premise of the game is that it's played out using a pen, pencil, and paper, which is sort of gridded. So, you know, the kind of math books you had back in school, although probably everyone has iPads now and that kind of thing, and a deck of cards. What you'll do is you'll have the rulebook by the side of you, and you'll draw cards from the deck, and this will decide what you see in front of you.
Is this just a standard deck of playing cards or a custom deck?
Yeah, so you just need a standard deck of playing cards to play the game.
Uh-huh.
On the cards, you could find things like treasures, traps, resources, expansion elements to your cave, and all sorts of things. And you'll draw them into the boxes as you start to delve down into your cavern in search of this mighty treasure. Now, obviously, when you're delving too deep, as the dwarves are wont to do, you'll also come up against monsters. And they've got a really awesome sort of rock, paper, scissors style combat mechanic in there as well, which uses the same deck of cards in order for you to fight things. As I say, you'll be sort of developing and drawing this dungeon and this sort of this dwarven hold as you go down into sort of through your map on the piece of paper, and you'll be able to plan ahead as well. So you'll be able to put things down like defenses and that kind of thing and draw them into the little boxes. You don't have to be amazing at drawing, I will say, in order to play the game. You can just use sort of like signifiers and iconography if you want to. But if you are someone who likes illustrating stuff or like doodling on your character sheet when you're playing role-playing games, this is the kind of thing you want to do. As I said, the game sounds really fun, really simple and really easy to play. It sounds like something that would be really good for you taking on the train somewhere, or you know, maybe you're flying. You can break out the paper and pens and sort of start doodling away and playing the game. And because it's got almost like a little bit of a roguelike element to it, where once you die you obviously have to try and reset and start again, it will be able to tell lots of different stories of your delve down into the sort of dwarven hold on the paper. So yeah, if you want something that's a little bit smaller and you know doesn't involve plastic, this is a Kickstarter thing you might want to go and check out. So yeah.
That's funny, this idea. I think you'd be the most annoying passenger ever on the airplane, sitting like this, drawing away, trying to get out of my way. I want that. Need some more space to be artistic here.
Look, I know you're very artistic, Lloyd, and you like the big artistic flourishes, but you can draw a little bit more delicately. You don't have to elbow the person next to you in the chin.
We're annoying as it is when we're on boats and buses and planes and stuff.
We are. There's no getting away from it. We totally are. We
don't even have to be on transportation for us to be annoying. We'd just be sitting here.
Mm.
I was going to say, the thing I really like about this is that I'm someone who likes sort of sketching maps and that kind of thing. And I also used to take Fighting Fantasy with me when I was going somewhere, playing it using the pages to do the dice choosing and stuff. So this seems like the kind of game that I would really enjoy. And there's a lot of other stuff out there at the moment which goes on that sort of like similar vein. There's lots of like draw your dungeon style adventures on Amazon and stuff. So this is going into a field that already has other people that enjoy it. So if this is the kind of thing that you might like, then I suggest going to check it out on Kickstarter.
There we go.
The fact the PDF is that cheap as well.
Yes,
it's a great way of randomly generating dungeons if you're running RPGs.
Exactly.
So it's a mechanic. Mm-hmm.
Do you like drawing dungeons, Jerry? Because sometimes when we're doing the XLBS show, you're sitting drawing away.
I scribble all the time.
This would actually give you a purpose for all that drawing and scribbling.
We could, at the end of every show, Yeah, at the end of every show, we could walk away with a new dungeon.
New dungeon to explore.
We'll have to hook you up with the Caesars.
Yes.
And their dungeon building podcast.
Yes.
Mm. So get Jerry to Jerry to do a dungeon. You will put a parental rating on that dungeon, let me tell you, but it'll be interesting.
It'll be every week. Oh, look, a bloodied crate. Oh, look, another bloodied crate.
Might not always be bloodied crates.
Well, sometimes, a pit of severed members.
Sometimes they would be mimics.
Mimics, of course. Yeah. Pretending to be a bloodied crate.
Yeah.
Ben, you are a star. Good choices on the Kickstarters. So 10 days left on Conan the Conqueror, 7 days left on Delve. Go and check him out. Ben, thank you very much again for joining us. As always, it's time to give away a 3D mini to every viewer. Okay, it's 3D model giveaway time. Right, this week, we want to introduce you to the wonderful Titanforge.
Yes.
So Titanforge, if you haven't seen it, we're going to blow your socks off this week. Titanforge have started a new thing where they have a Patreon, mm-hmm. okay? And you can sign up to their Patreon, and then every month, they have a new selection of models that you, as a patron, will be able to download and print, okay? So their current Patreon for February is these dwarven bad guys. Scroll up to the top there, Justin, just so you see it. Look at that! These models are absolutely beautiful. My jaw hit the floor when I saw these. Now, you will know that I have a little soft spot for dwarven armies these days, because I've reached about the halfway point of the rebasing and the finishing of an enormous dwarven army that was put together.
The Dwarrens.
The Dwarrens, yeah. They were put together by some members of our community. That they donated some dwarves, and then we had members who we loved to absolute bits who painted up those dwarves, and then we got those dwarves in, and I have started the process of expertly basing those dwarves. And then I saw these, and I went, oh my God! They're amazing dwarves.
Ben had a very similar point of view, which is why he had to go off and have a lie down.
Yes, yeah. Ben wouldn't have made it through this segment. We were having to wipe up Ben. Right. So for February, it's dwarves. It's just nothing but dwarves. Okay. We printed one of those dwarves, just to get a feel for it, to see how it would go. So I set my buddy Justin the challenge of printing what was my favorite dwarven model the whole thing.
Have a nice close-up image of it if you want to see it.
Yeah, go for it.
So that's this guy, the Ancient Forge. So it's this big sort of steam-powered mechanical anvil.
It's just awesome.
It is really, really
kick-ass. I loved the concept of it. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I saw it, I thought, that will fit beautifully into the Dwarven Army that I've been creating. So I said to Justin, let's go and print him and see. So we've printed one, okay? Mm-hmm. So this is one that we printed. Now, this one was printed on an Anycubic Photon.
Yep.
We set the layer height to...
0.02? Yep. So quite a fine layer height. Overall,
but not the finest, because it's capable of going to 0.01.
Yeah, but I think that's overkill. Mm-hmm. You know, but this took about a little over 12 hours print time to get everything ran out.
Yeah.
Laying all the components out on the bed. So you've got to do two hammers, two forearms, two upper arms, the main engine, the base, and the anvil.
Where are the other arms?
What?
You said you did four arms.
Four arms. Four arms.
Arms for fours.
The only bit that's... Well, we're only going to point it out. The only bit I'm going to point out is you've got some little support stuff left.
Yeah, this is something I want to talk to everybody about whenever we get onto our freebie. Is now that we're doing more resin bath stuff, I am beginning the process of learning just how much scaffolding you should be applying to these things.
Mm-hmm. And this all the scaffolding there.
I set the scaffolding to about 85% on this one. I think that's overkill.
The reason you see that, now we could have filed that off. Mm-hmm. Filed it off a bit, but we were running out of time to get the thing ready for the show. Yeah. So I wanted to get it there, get it zenith, just so as you could see the detail of it.
Yeah.
Turn them around. You see the actual dwarf character itself, Jerry.
Even things like that, though. So you've got three different dials, all pointing with little needles on them. So you have your red lines and stuff, so you know exactly just how much he's going to explode all over the place.
But look at the dwarf. Like, Jerry, this is a miniature.
Mm. Yeah, that's a high quality miniature
that we created here.
All right,
in house.
Right, cut between. Put it to the front facing on him.
Okay,
close camera.
There's a lovely little set of what appear to be shears or calipers or something there.
Yeah.
I mean, the detail is very fine.
The detail's incredible.
Right. Now, cut between that and the 3D render image.
Yeah.
To see how close that is. That is so, so close.
Right. So the Anycubic Photon, mm-hmm. You could use it. The other resin printer that we like is the Elegoo Mars. Mm. Both those printers are around a couple of £100.
Yeah.
Okay. That in material cost cost 38p?
About 38p in material, resin. Now, mm-hmm. I didn't calculate how much it was for the power or anything, but you could go into that if you really want. But if you think, if I was buying that in a shop, I would expect to pay what? 20 quid minimum?
I'm thinking about 20 quid probably we'd be paying for the likes of that. Mm. That was 38p of material.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're an American, that literally is cheap as chips.
Yeah. And the.
Nice.
The subscription itself is $10.
$10 a month?
Yeah.
Is there higher subscriptions than that?
No, so they had the first night one, which they're sold out on now.
Uh-huh.
The rest is the Paladin, which is the $10 a month one.
Presumably first night is just the first
round. It's like early birds.
Yeah, an early bird, a dollar off. Yeah.
Yeah. So $10 a month.
Yeah.
And like in February, you were getting... a dragon, four dwarf heroes, mm-hmm. another dwarf hero and a ram, six regular dwarfs, two dwarf Autobots, an ancient forge, mm-hmm. and 43 bases.
43 and, bases, yeah.
And eight terrain elements? Holy smokes.
And then they've got a welcome package along with that.
Yeah.
So you got five miniatures, 43 bases, access to the community group, and access to special whip updates.
Right.
That's really cool.
So... that, if you haven't checked it out, that Titanforge Patreon
really
is definitely worth checking out. Now, we're giving away a free model this week, which is from the guys at Titanforge, mm-hmm. and this is Grog?
Gore.
Where Gore am I grogging from?
Grognarg. Yeah.
So this is Gore mm-hmm. the Barbarian. So let's get him under the close cam there. So if you bring them up, so this one we have printed and done a basic zenith on, just to help you mm-hmm. pick out the details. That is a model that we printed in house on a £200 machine.
Yeah. Now you'll notice around the back of the cloak, you've still got some of those little pips and stuff. Because again, I was still going way too heavy with the scaffolding.
Well, I tell you what. Mm. Why don't we show people how we do the supports on it?
Yeah, okay. I can do that right now.
Right, so let's have a look.
So this is our miniature. We're in CheetoBox, which is the slicer program we're using for this. So you can see all around him. And generally, whenever I'm doing this, I look at where is the least detail to actually use as my lowest side.
Yes, or where is the bit that is most hidden? Where is it that you could place supports that isn't going to interfere with details you want to keep, like faces and...
Yeah.
And you know, shield patterns and breastplates.
Yeah, it's a nice big smooth area.
Yeah.
So what I decided for this guy was, I wanted to have him on his back.
Of course you did.
Calm down. So I'll turn it this way.
Yeah. Two massive mutton chop sideburns. That'd be where I'd just apply supports to. So much support texture there.
So if I can do this, grab this and just lean it right back, and I think about there is pretty good.
Now, bear in mind, the further you can lead him back, the quicker he'll print.
Yeah, because it's true. Height dependent.
Yeah, and the other thing that we tend to do is we tend to print a couple of things. We try to fill the bed when we're printing, because if you're going to spend 6 hours on a print,
yeah,
a A full bed in a resin printer takes 6 hours.
Yeah. But what I also always do with it is I lift it up off the bed by 5 mil.
Yeah.
Now that gives you 5 mil of scaffolding in beneath them.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a very specific reason for that, but we'll come to it in a minute. Now, as you can see, we've got our settings here. So down the side, if I go to here, you'll be able to see it better.
Yes, that's easier, better.
Right, now, your options are, you've got the minimum length for a piece of scaffolding. That's telling you what's the minimum gap between something where you're allowing it to actually put a stick in, okay? Mm-hmm. I normally set that to about 2.5 mil.
Yeah.
2.5. Mm-hmm. Then cross start height minimum 3 is generally okay. And then the density, I had set it to 85, right? So I'll set it to 85 now, and the angle's 45 degrees. So mm-hmm. that tells it at what angle of an overhang should it be adding a support.
Yeah.
So we just click all on here.
Mm-hmm.
This will take a second.
Well, of course, I'm going to put scaffold everywhere.
Yeah. And as you can see, there is scaffold everywhere.
Now, we can actually show you on the close cam here how that then kind of comes off the bed.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you have actually printed your model, it comes off like that.
Yes. Now, the reason that I lift this up by 5 mil is the next one that you have in your hand there, Warren.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the base of that scaffolding on that one, Jerry, you'll see the way it's lifted up slightly? It's not perfectly flat.
It's like a banana.
Yeah. So basically, that 5 mil gap allows it to have that, but there's enough just of a straight line that's not part of the miniature, not anything else, mm-hmm. that it can continue to build through. And then the rest of the miniature will build on top of that.
So this is
scaffolding deforms, not your miniature.
So that theoretically, when you pull all the scaffolding off that, it will still be a usable miniature in there.
Yeah.
Well, you won't have lost anything.
Yeah. If I actually
flat man.
Have one of these that I had already took off, and it is still absolutely flawless.
Mm-hmm.
My mistake is I've put way too much scaffolding on here. So what really? I need to do.
Can I give you the settings that I would run, just
yes.
so you see, right?
Yes, so give
okay,
me
so first things first, right? Mm-hmm. Up at the support settings, up at the very top, uh-huh. I tend to go with light rather than medium.
Light, okay.
So that's, the reason I go with light is the light support settings I find are easier to peel away from the miniature.
Your connection point.
I've never had a problem mm-hmm. with them, okay?
Yeah.
And the minimum length, I'd be tempted to keep that more towards the 3 mil mark, because what you might find is sometimes if you do it 2.5 mil, if there's a wee gap between two parts, it might sometimes stick a little bit of scaffolding somewhere where you just don't expect it.
Yeah, or you don't necessarily need it.
Now, it's interesting you went with density of 85, because I pulled density down to 40.
40. Okay. All right, let's have a look mm-hmm. and see what difference that makes. So
what I've been doing 40? Is using density around 40.
What's your angle like?
And sometimes I muck around with the angle as well.
Yeah.
But in this case, I would leave it at 45 because it is a fairly complicated miniature.
Right, let's see what we get for yours. So that.
It's just the same.
Yeah.
No. The major difference with Warren's one is. My ones, there was a lot more clumping mm-hmm. of pieces coming up. So I'd say we could probably push this down even further, Warren. So let's see what happens whenever we drop that down to, say, 25.
Mm-hmm.
And let's change the angle to 60.
Yep.
So we'll remove them all.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll go again. Because the angle's what should really change this. You see the way it's thinking a little more?
Ah. Is that better? Is that worse?
You see, remember, it has to provide to the anchor point. So so here's the other thing that I often do. If you remove all there, Justin.
Yes.
Okay.
Well,
you can actually add supports manually.
Yeah.
So if you scroll right under, mm-hmm. Like that. Yeah.
So all those red points are mm-hmm. points where there's what's called islands. It's where I'll try and print something. Well, there's nothing to support it below it.
Mm-hmm. So what if you click on, if you hover your mouse over and then just click, can start to add supports.
I would want one on his elbow, say this part of his cape. And it also, if I come up to the side here, you'll see it actually gives you a line showing you where you're at when you're adding those. So if you really want it, you could go through and just do all of it. So
what
say it was that.
Yeah. So
I think that's sufficient there. What do you reckon, Lloyd?
You'll need a lot more than that.
As many as I can be bothered checking on individually.
This is something I've had happen to me in the past, though, is whenever I'm putting supports on and building scaffolds onto things, if I don't have enough on there at a certain point, say there's a large area. So if I pull this down, you can actually see the different areas. So you see, like around here, where we've got quite a bit of surface area that it's drawing off.
Yeah.
If there's too much surface area and not enough strength on that scaffolding to hold it together, I've seen miniatures that have actually then just ripped off the scaffolding.
Yes. Yes, this is true. So remember how a 3D resin printer works. So what it does is it brings a metal bed down into a bath of resin. Okay. It comes right pretty much to within a fraction of a millimeter of contact to a clear film. Okay. UV light is then shone through in the shape of that layer. Hmm. And then that hits the resin and cures the resin.
Yeah, so it becomes like a CAT scan.
But as well as sticking to the metal bed, it also kind of sticks a little bit to the FEP, to the clear filter, or the clear plastic that it's shining through.
Yeah.
So what it has to be able to do is it has to be able to draw up and have enough strength of its connection to the bed to make sure that it comes off the FEP filter.
But not off the bed.
But not off the bed. And what you're seeing there on
with
that
our little banana base.
That was caused.
Banana base is over there.
Yeah, so if you put that under, that has been caused by part of that model actually
lifting
mm-hmm. off the actual bed because when it was on the FEP, it
pulls from there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, there's a couple of things
that can cause that.
Yeah, the old print
upside down. Yeah.
There's a couple of things that can cause that. Number one is if the surface area is too tight and it pulls off the bed first. Mm-hmm. But also if you're slightly off angle.
Yes.
Because what it'll do is it will cure up through to the point where it hits the bed. But if it's slightly off angle, you've got a void there. Mm-hmm. And then it starts to draw off from that.
Yeah.
Also, if you don't have the head of your bed tightened down properly, you can find that it pulls off and prints something at an angle, which mm-hmm. is very weird.
I'm still listening.
I want to try something here.
Yes.
Okay. So, Justin, remove all. Okay.
Bring them back up. Remove all. Okay.
And this time, leave the density at 25%, but change the angle to 30.
To 30. Mm-hmm. That's a very low angle. That's going to apply a lot.
Well, let's see. I'm always curious, and it costs us nothing to try.
Yeah. So lower angles will generate more. Because it tells it needs to be less of an angle to need support. Mm-hmm. And I believe if you increase it, that should decrease it. Because it'll only be looking for like 90 degree angles.
Yeah.
But that doesn't look bad. The only thing I would maybe add some to would be this rock.
Now, the other thing that you can do, remember, is you can hit that... Whoa, wait.
Okay.
Do you see the minus button in the middle there, Justin?
Yeah. That lets you take some out.
You can actually take out individual supports. Now, what I tend to do is to look at supports that are actually on the face of the model or connecting bits of the model. So if you go up, scroll, So do you see that wee tiny support?
This one?
Like that, yeah.
Yeah, you would drop that.
Probably not needed.
Yeah. This one between here, I would say, is needed. If you look, it's right on an island.
Yeah.
This side's not so bad because it's connecting from here. Mm-hmm. I would actually add some here.
Yeah.
So just where you've got that little bit of an island there, you can pop a couple in. I would throw a lot onto the rock.
Can you remove many of them? Because, I mean, looking at some on here, there's some in what I would see as aggravating areas to get to. There's two under this horn, one here, and there's a second one behind it.
Yeah, so there's a reason that that's there. So you see here on the 3D model that's in here, you can actually see that will actually become an island and not print if it doesn't have it there. One that I would remove is, you see this one here? That doesn't seem to have any purpose, so we would drop that. It's really how much time do you apply to doing all of this is your question.
Yeah,
well, I wouldn't.
Because the more time you apply to it and the better you can actually look at it and work with it. Like, the thing I've decided that I'm going to look at in the next ones, if I move this.
It depends on how many you plan to print. If you're printing more than one, spend more time at it. If you're just printing one, clean up the one when it comes out.
Yeah.
One thing I don't want to do, though, is you see here, we've got some where it's like two put together in some spots. See, like here. So if I click that, they're sort of intersecting on each other.
Yeah.
I would start dropping ones like that.
Oh, this, like this node back here, where it's like 17 stuck together. It's, it looks like the Fortress of Solitude.
Yes,
there's so many
it does,
together.
Yes, yeah.
But that's my thoughts for the future is if I have the time, I'm going to spend more time looking at where are there massive clumps of these together. And what I'll probably also look at is, so there's a connection depth, see contact depth here.
Yes.
So that tells you how deep it's going into the miniature. Mm-hmm. So if we start increasing that, you can actually look on the little display up the top there.
Yes.
It's showing you how deep it connects. Mm-hmm. So it's very little, or I would say if I had it about there is where I'd be happy with it. Just looking at the preview.
Oh, I don't know. I like to keep it very little. I have a suggestion and a message for the industry. We are seeing more and more of these STL subscriptions and more people supplying the models digitally. Mm. I love it. I think it's great. I have the resin printing to me is miraculous. I pick up models like the Barbarian and like this Dwarf, and I can't believe...
You can't tell the difference.
I really would struggle to tell the difference between that and a model that we've been sent and reviewing for the last 10 years. I really do struggle. However, I have a suggestion for all you guys who are embarking on these 3D subscription services and stuff. Look at including your scaffolding into the model so that the end user doesn't have to go through this process.
So pre-scaffold.
Pre-scaffold.
That's an idea.
The model.
Now, there is one recommendation I have for the companies, and it's what has been done here. So on their actual, I think there's a website where you can just pick this miniature up. My Mini Factory, I think, has it. The one that they gave to us to give away to everybody doesn't have a base on it.
Yes.
And I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a very specific reason I like that. Number one, less material to print with.
Yes.
And you're not trying to print past it.
Yes.
Because if you're trying to print past it, I mean, like, look at the way this is with the base on.
Mm-hmm.
So you would be trying to print that cape, that loincloth there, past this base. Without that, you can just get straight at it with your scaffold.
Yes. Otherwise, you would have to have the scaffold extend from the base...
To the component.
To the component.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's a giant undercut, basically.
Yeah.
It's a giant undercut.
Yeah. So that's my recommendation.
Right. Do we have the link and stuff ready for them to download?
No, we do
right,
not have
we're
the link,
bring it up.
There will be a link where you can go to the On Tabletop store to grab this totally free. You just have to make a free account.
So create yourself a free account. Hundreds of you have already done it anyway for the Necron Pillar. And the Necron, the Necrossia Pillar Tomb is still available. So if you want to pick up that model as well while you're at it, you'd be very welcome to come along and do it. Mm-hmm. But that Barbarian is free to you guys.
Yeah.
Right.
Go check out the Titanforge Patreon because it's got some really cool stuff if you're getting into your 3D print.
Right. That wraps us up. Another weekender under our belt. Thank you for watching. Tomorrow we have XLBS, which is an exclusive episode for the Cult of Games.
Sunday.
Oh, yeah. Sunday. Yeah, it's not tomorrow. It's Sunday. Sunday morning, we have an exclusive episode for our Cult of Games members. This project wouldn't survive without the support of our Cult of Games members. That is our Patreon. They are our patrons, and they're the reason that we can bring this and all of the other things like the website, the project system, and everything else to you guys. We need more of you. And we appreciate every single one of you. So thank you again for watching. Thanks to the team. That has been your Weekender. Go ahead and check out our other content on screen now. And while you're at it, why not hit subscribe and remember to ding our dong. Go on, you know you want to click it. Go on.